In it for the kicks, back in my day.
For this week's Back in My Day, we thought we'd get a little housey on it. In 2001, the Summer House sound was a very firm feature on every dance floor, from Ibiza to, well, maybe Invercargill. In the thick of it all was house producer Mark Zowie. In the year 2000, Mark and his production partner Gary Little made a track under the alias of Little Devious. Now these days, Mark produces house music as Mark Zowie, and we take Polaroids. Mark tells the story of Little Devious, Come On, one of the biggest summer hits of 2001 in the UK for Ministry of Sound.
Started messing about 1991-92. Yep. First record came out 95, and the rest is history, so it's
What was the record that came out in 95, or what alias, or...?
It was under the Lil Devious moniker.
Oh, it was?
L-I-L apostrophe Devious. Okay. And that was track called Lifted. That was the very first single that we ever released. That was on Strong House, actually, in London. There was quite a lot of really good names on that at the time. You know, people like Wild Child, God Rest His Soul, he was on that record label, and Daniel J. Lewis, and...
Yep, M&S.
16B.
Where did you meet Gary?
Gary was introduced to me by a friend. It was noted that I was working in a wee studio outside of Carlisle at the time, and he had his own little, tiny little setup. We kind of just put our heads together, and there was no really sort of big kind of, oh, let's do this, you know. We just kind of just started working on things, and we had a little body of work, so we decided to see if we were able to, if it was valid enough to sort of get put out. And we were very lucky that we were picked up by Strong House at the time, because as I say, they were kind of making quite a large mark for themselves, and they were very susceptible to the kind of, we've always been a little bit left of centre to a degree. We try not to be too obvious a dance floor smashy, you know, 100 mile an hour kind of, it's difficult to sort of put my finger on it really, but we kind of come out with something 1 minute like a disco record, the next minute it would be kind of sort of Africana or Latino, or, you know, we always try to not be able to be pigeonholed very easily, if that makes sense.
Is that when you started creating kind of different names for your different...
Yeah, I think that's the problem, to be honest with you. I think it's been very difficult for people to kind of follow our body of work, because not only was obviously Little Devious kind of our original project, but because it was spurring out different ideas, we did generally think at a time, you know, what this record, for example, that we signed to Norman Cook's label,
Southern Fried Records.
Southern Fried.
Was that as Percy
Filth? It was quite a techie record. It was maybe just a little bit too techie for the Little Devious output. So we thought, well, okay, then we'll, you know, it was a bit of a quirky record. So we came up with a quirky name, and it was Percy Filth.
And was the track
called
Show Me Your Monkey?
Yeah. That came out on Southern Fried, and it would spur on different ideas, and it was very difficult for us to kind of be pigeonholed, you know.
So you'd formed the partnership of Little Devious, and
yeah,
you're putting out some pretty solid records at the time as well, and then one in particular came along in, well, it came out in 2001, but can you tell us the story, which will be the Back in My Day story, about...
Yeah.
Your track, Come Home.
Yeah, well, I think Come Home was probably about a year old before it actually came out. It took that long for us to get it signed and get it finished. It was an instrumental by, it must have been about a year old before a vocal ever went anywhere near it, is basically what I'm trying to say. And primarily it was made up of three samples. The main loop, the main hook, from what I remember, was Flashback by Imagination. And when we originally had the track running, we had it looping really quite different to the way we actually use here today. We decided to kind of let it run a little bit more like the original record. And... it was only about 120-122 BPM. It was quite slouchy. It was a little bit lazy on the percussion. But again, that was the idea. We didn't want anything too banging along. It was kind of a laid-back, summery vibe. I know the French scene was really at its peak, I suppose, by the time we kind of finished that record. And somehow, I don't actually remember how it happened, but we got contacted by Ministry of Sound. Maybe we sent them the record, I don't actually remember. Unless someone's passed it on for us, I don't remember. And they got in touch and they said, look, have you thought about putting a vocal on it? And we were thinking, well, being quite stubborn, no, we don't really want to put a vocal on it. Well, you know, we'd be really interested in it if you did. And being in Carlisle, we weren't at the time really surrounded by a lot of vocalists. So it would have meant me and Gary really going out on a limb trying to find somebody, then writing something. And it was one of the guys at the ministry said that, look, they actually own a large back catalogue by the Salsoul label. And if we agreed and it was okay to do so, would they mind sending up the back catalogue for a cappellas of all the a cappellas from the Salsoul back catalogue? So Crosby says, yeah, it'd be great. I mean, it was just interesting enough even to listen to them, and they sent them up. We had a wee listen. Bear in mind the track was already called Come Home. Unfortunately, I don't remember the guy's name who was singing the vocal on the original Salsoul record, but he appeared to be singing Come Home. I believe it's Come On, but it sounded like Come Home. And the vocal just seemed to sit. No tuning was needed. A lot of editing to sit it on and make it fit. Yeah, fair enough, but it was in tune, and it just seemed to work. It was one of those lucky kind of scenarios. It was a kind of meant to be moment, you know, and we sent it back down to them within sort of 48 hours, and they kind of sort of said wow, and jaws dropped, and everything seemed to work from there, really. The problem being, though, as I say, it was a best part, very large amounts of samples. There was three main key samples in there. I think one of the nicest parts about the record is right at the very beginning where we've looped the vocal. It's just a girl, again, just very lucky finding a girl singing this Come Home, and we loop it and turn it into a string, and that pretty much became a Little Devious kind of trademark. You know, we used that kind of idea on a few different tracks, like Magic Star and a couple of remixes that we did. But yeah, it was a record that seemed to define the sort of time. The timing was really, really good for it. And we were sort of sat in our studio just plugging away on another record one afternoon, one morning, and we got a call to say that on promo, white label, vinyl, one-sided, it had sold 9,000 copies in one morning. Those apparently were official figures from Ministry of Sound that we were told at the time. And of course, these days, if you did that, you'd be number one in the charts, I think.
After they did the single-sided, how did the remixes, how did the Agent Sumo, the Dave Clark and stuff remixes come to be?
Well, apparently the Dave Clark story goes that he was driving home one night from a DJ gig, and or he was on his way to one in his car, and he heard it either being played on Danny Ramplin's show or Pete Tong's show. I'm not quite sure which one it was. And he rang Ministry of Sound and asked if he could actually remix it. And that's how that came about. I really like his remix, actually, but there was an edited, there was the original version and a slightly edited version, and I think the edited version went onto the vinyl, but there is a slightly different version of that, which was a monster. The Agent Sumo did the other remix, which for me was pretty much a similar template to the way we'd actually arranged it, but it was just a little bit tighter beats wise, which was, in fairness, kind of what we avoided, but it still worked really, really well. We did a lovely job of it, you know.
And there was something special about the Roland Records, so the Ministry of Sound one, that had the Agent Sumo on one side and the Dave Clark remix. I've actually got it at home. I've got the 12-inch at home, that blue vinyl, and it had a, it was reverse playing.
That's right, you had to start it from the middle.
Yeah, which was really...
Yeah, I actually know a guy who worked in a record shop at the time, and he told me that a number of people took the record back because they thought it was faulty. And he had to explain to them that they had to be played from the middle out. So, yeah, it was... I don't actually know whose idea that was. I'd like to say it was mine or Gary's, but no, I think it was a... just a little quirky idea from one of the guys at the Ministry of Sound.
Obviously, most people liked the tune and were playing it, but also sold a lot of copies, so hopefully that helped you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, as I said, it did really well for us, believe it or not, though. From what I've gathered, it didn't actually get released at the time they were going to do it. What they decided to do was they decided to do a video. Because of such a huge response on the promo, they decided to do a video. From what I was told, it was going to be released originally 2 or 3 weeks after promo shot, but it didn't happen like that. What they decided to do was go away and do a video, and it shot with a couple of girls in Miami, and it, you know, 20 grand was thrown at it as far as the video was concerned, and it got, you know, it got MTV and various other players. But apparently, from what I remember, it was something like the September that it came out, and it was a long time after promo had sort of came and gone, and the video had been played, and I think it only peaked at something like 55 in the charts at the time, which was a big shock to everybody. You know, I think it was just one of those records that kind of lost a little bit of momentum. It was a summer record, but it was early summer when it was really hitting hard, and for whatever reason, they released it a lot later than they were actually going to. I think if they'd have done it a little bit earlier, it might have hit a bit harder. I do remember it going in a little bit higher in the charts than a Mariah Carey record that was released that month. I think it was the month of it was Starlight or whatever it was, the French record. Superman Lovers.
Superman Lovers. Yeah, I'm with you. Yep.
Yeah, it was that week.
So how did the response from Come Home help you out in the long run?
I mean, of course, it lifted the profile. We were offered numerous remixes, and you know, some of them we took, some of them we didn't, and we were really quite choosy and a little bit sort of, oh, you know, it's very difficult to explain the sort of attitude that we had with the Little Devious. Sort of, yeah, I suppose it's almost like a brand. You know, you want to keep it as tight and as fresh and as cool as humanly possible. But at the time, we really, you know, never really been in it for the money, and we were offered certain remixes, and we kind of thought, you know, it's really not kind of what we wanted. There was talk of a Kylie remix at the time, which was mentioned very early on, and we were like, no. And it was just something that we weren't really that interested in really jumping on the bandwagon for, really. So we probably knocked far more remixes back than we actually took on. Possibly to our detriment. Probably I would have said it probably damaged us in more ways than one, really. But we like to always think that, well, there's a little bit of integrity in this industry that's rare. And if it's just something that we felt particularly uncomfortable about, that we really, really never, ever did that, you know. So we stayed away from a lot of DJ work. We stayed away, you know, we only played various places that we were really interested in playing. And we just sort of kept our heads down and what have you. I think over time, yeah, probably did us damage, but at least we can sort of sit back and go, well, you know, what we did was really good, and we enjoyed it, and we did it for the right reasons, and you know, none of us were ever really making a lot of money at it at the time, but as I say, that isn't kind of what we were doing it for anyways, you know.
So it was more important to have no regrets on making music that you love.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely, yeah. We were both very stubborn, and I say that with a smile, you know. It was the way we were with that kind of output, and that's the way we wanted it to be. And we got a lot of kudos for it as well, you know. We got some great reviews. We've had some amazing supporters with the Little Devious music, you know, from Matters at Work, Roger Sanchez, all the guys that were around at the time, still sort of bubbling away. Sneak, you know, all these kind of guys that we respected what we were doing, and that worked for us, and that's all it was about. The only thing that we were interested in was the respect from the people that we listened to. That was it. For about a year afterwards, we were getting vinyl and CDs from all over the world where they licensed it. You know, it came out everywhere. I mean, I have Spanish versions, and you know, it rolled around the world, and we just kept getting different variations of the artwork from different countries. It was really quite amazing how it was transferring around the globe, you know, and then of course it started hitting, Clubbers Guide 2 and the annuals, and it just seemed to go on so many compilation albums at the time. For a while, there was this kind of, oh God, the people are still talking about Come Home, and there's a negative side to having quite a big record at the time, because when we actually sent a second record to the Ministry of Sound, they were like, you know what, we love this record you sent. It's a track called So Good. It eventually came out on a record label called Lord, and they were like, you know what, we love this record, but it's not Come Home, is it? And we were like, absolutely not, no. Oh yeah, we wanted something a bit more Come Home. And we were like, well, it's not really kind of what we were sort of hoping. We were hoping you might take something, you know, similar flavour, but not a carbon copy. And yeah, we're sort of looking for another Come Home, really. So we sort of thought, oh, okay, well, we're not really singing off the same hymn sheet here, really. So we sort of walked away from it, really, to be honest. I mean, you'll see it yourself, actually, you know. You'll see a release come out from a particularly big label. I mean, I've still got a lot of love for Ministry of Sound. You know, they put a record out of mine, stretched really well, they did okay with us. And although I don't get their kind of commercial output, but they've still made such a large mark in the dance music industry, you know. So, and I respect them for that, but you can't possibly expect an artist to drop an identical, you know. You do genuinely sometimes hear an artist come out with what could be potentially the same track, but with the same keyboards, the same synths, the same programming values, but just messed around a little bit with a different vocal. You know, it's almost like they've been so terrified to lose a deal that they've been kind of sideswiped into making the same record again, with just a different mix of notes. I hear it on a regular basis on, you know, large record, sorry, radio stations over here, and it seems to be almost like a fear factor that once you've had a big record, people sort of expect the same thing from you, and that's kind of, you know, I mentioned how stubborn we were with the Little Devious records, you know. There's no way that we were ever going to fall into that kind of bracket, because we were all already in the mindset that, you know, we did what we did and we did what we wanted to do, and it's got to feel right or it does not happen at all. We were both in the studio, and if one of us slightly disagreed on something, it was game over. We didn't ever argue about anything like that. It was always, what do you think? Well, I don't really want to do that. That's it then, fine. Don't even think about it. Done. If we both said great, yes, game on. But if one of us just had the slightest inkling of negativity, it was just never, ever going to take place. I think that's why we stuck together for so long, me and Gary. You know, I mean, we haven't worked together since the Burn the Negative days, but it was the way we worked. And I think any producers with any kind of longevity, they've kind of got to have a kind of, even like an unwritten rule, some kind of like an unseen form of communication where you've both just got to instinctively know how each other feels about a certain scenario. You know, if something's eating away at the other, it won't last 5 minutes, you know, and I think that's why me and Gary hung around and stuck around for such a long time together. I mean, it was 1995, which was the first record we released, up to 2008. It was a good length of time that we were putting records out together, you know. It's primarily about respecting each other and understanding